With the help of a glamour and Jace's ability to swing himself one-armed up onto a curving old bridge, Clary and Jace escaped the Italian police without being arrested. Once they had stopped running, they collapsed against the side of a building, laughing, side by side, their hands interlinked. Clary felt a moment of pure, sharp happiness and had to bury her head against Jace's shoulder, reminding herself, in a hard, internal voice, that this wasn't him, before her laughter trailed off into silence. Jace seemed to take her sudden quiet as a sign that she was tired. He held her hand lightly as they made their way back to the street they'd started out from, the narrow canal with bridges on both ends. In between them, Clary recognized the blank, featureless townhouse they'd left. A shudder ran over her. Cold? Jace pulled her toward him and kissed her. He was so much taller than she was that he either had to bend down or pick her up. In this case, he did the latter, and she suppressed a gasp as he swung her up and through the wall of the house. Setting her down, he kicked a door, which had appeared suddenly behind them, shut with a bang, and was about to shake off his jacket when there was a sound of a stifled chuckle. Clary pulled away from Jace as lights blazed up around them. Sebastian sat on the sofa, his feet up on the coffee table. His fair hair was tousled, his eyes were glossy black. He wasn't alone, either. There were two girls there, one on either side of him. One was fair, a little scantily dressed, in a glittering short skirt and spangled top. She had her hand splayed out across Sebastian's chest. The other was younger, softer looking, with black hair cut short, a red velvet band around her head, and a lacy black dress. Clary felt her nerves tighten. Vampire, she thought. She didn't know how she knew, but she did. Whether it was the waxy white sheen of the dark-haired girl's skin, or the bottomlessness of her eyes, or perhaps Clary was just learning to sense these things, the way shadow hunters were supposed to. The girl knew she knew, Clary could tell. The girl grinned, showing her little pointed teeth, and then bent to run them over Sebastian's collarbone. His lids fluttered, fair eyelashes lowering over dark eyes. He looked up at Clary through them, ignoring Jace. "Did you enjoy your little date?" Clary wished she could say something rude, but instead she just nodded. "Well then, would you like to join us?" he said, indicating himself and the two girls. "For a drink?" The dark-haired girl laughed and said something in Italian to Sebastian, her voice questioning. "No," said Sebastian. "La mia sorella." The girl sat back, looking disappointed. Clary's mouth was dry. Suddenly she felt Jace's hand against hers, his calloused fingertips rough. "I don't think so," he said. "We're going upstairs. We'll see you in the morning." Sebastian wiggled his fingers, and the Morgenstern ring on his hand caught the light, sparkling like a signal fire. "Ci vediamo." Jace led Clary out of the room and up the glass stairs. Only when they were in the corridor did she feel like she had gotten her breath back. This different Jace was one thing. Sebastian was something else. The sense of menace that rose off him was like smoke off fire. "What did he say?" she asked, in Italian. "He said, 'No, she is my sister,'" said Jace. He did not say what the girl had asked Sebastian. "Does he do this much?" she asked. They had stopped in front of Jace's room, on the threshold. "Bring girls back?" Jace touched her face. "He does what he wants, and I don't ask," he said. He could bring a 6-foot-tall pink rabbit in a bikini back home with him if he wanted to. It's not my business. But if you're asking me if I've brought any girls back here, the answer is no. I don't want anyone but you. It hadn't been what she was asking, but she nodded anyway, as if reassured. "I don't want to go back downstairs. You can sleep in my room, with me tonight." His gold eyes were luminous in the dark. Or you can sleep in the master bedroom. You know I wouldn't ever ask you. I want to be with you, she said, surprising herself with her own vehemence. Maybe it was just that the idea of sleeping in that bedroom, where Valentine had once slept, where he had hoped to live again with her mother, was too much. Or maybe it was that she was tired, and she'd only ever spent one night in the same bed as Jace, and they had slept with only their hands touching, as if an unsheathed sword had lain between them. Give me a second to clean up the room. It's a mess. Yeah, when I was in there before, I think I might actually have seen a fleck of dust on the windowsill. You'd better get on that. He tugged a lock of her hair, running it through his fingers. Not to actively work against my own interests, but do you need something to sleep in? Pajamas, or... She thought of the wardrobe full of clothes in the master bedroom. She was going to have to get used to the idea. Might as well start now. I'll get a nightgown. Of course, she thought several moments later, standing over an open drawer. The sort of nightgowns men bought because they wanted the women in their lives to wear them were not necessarily the kind of thing you might buy for yourself. Clary usually slept in a tank top and pajama shorts, but everything here was silky or lacy or barely there, or all three. She settled finally on a pale green silk shift that hit her mid-thigh. She thought of the red nails of the girl downstairs, the one with her hand on Sebastian's chest. Her own nails were bitten, her toenails never decorated with much more than clear polish. She wondered what it would be like to be more like Isabel, so aware of your own feminine power you could wield it as a weapon instead of gazing at it mystified, like someone presented with a housewarming gift they had no idea where to display. She touched the gold ring on her finger for luck before heading into Jace's bedroom. He was sitting on the bed, shirtless, in black pajama bottoms, reading a book in the small pool of yellow light from the bedside lamp. She stood for a moment, watching him. She could see the delicate play of muscles under his skin as he turned the pages, and could see Lilith's mark just over his heart. It didn't look like the black lacework of the rest of his marks. It was silvery red, like blood-tinged mercury. It seemed not to belong on him. The door slipped closed behind her with a click, and Jace looked up. Clary saw his face change. She might not have been such a big fan of the nightgown, but he definitely was. The look on his face made a shiver run over her skin. Are you cold? He threw the covers back. She crawled in with him as he tossed the book onto the nightstand, and they slid together under the blanket until they were facing each other. They'd lain in the boat for what had seemed like hours, kissing, but this was different. That had been out in public, under the gaze of the city and the stars. This was a sudden intimacy, just the two of them under the blanket, their breath and the heat of their bodies mingling. There was no one to watch them, no one to stop them, no reason to stop. When he reached out and laid his hand against her cheek, she thought the thunder of her own blood in her ears might deafen her. Their eyes were so close together, she could see the pattern of gold and darker gold in his irises, like a mosaic opal. She had been cold for so long, now she felt as if she were burning and melting at the same time, dissolving into him. And they were barely touching. She found her gaze drawn to the places he was most vulnerable, his temples, his eyes, the pulse at the base of his throat, wanting to kiss him there, to feel his heartbeat against her lips. His scarred right hand moved down her cheek, across her shoulder and side, stroking her in a single long caress that ended at her hip. She could see why men liked silk nightclothes so much. There was no friction. It was like sliding your hand across glass. "Tell me what you want," he said in a whisper that couldn't quite disguise the hoarseness in his voice. "I just want you to hold me," she said, "while I sleep. That's all I want right now." His fingers, which had been stroking slow circles on her hip, stilled. That's all. It wasn't what she wanted. What she wanted was to kiss him till she lost track of space and time and location, as she had in the boat. To kiss him until she forgot who she was and why she was here. She wanted to use him like a drug. But that was a very bad idea. He watched her, restless, and she remembered the first time she had seen him, and how she had thought he seemed deadly as well as beautiful, like a lion. This is a test, she thought, and maybe a dangerous one. That's all. His chest rose and fell. Lilith's mark seemed to pulse against the skin just over his heart. His hand tightened on her hip. She could hear her own breathing, as shallow as low tide. He pulled her toward him, rolling her over until they lay tucked together like spoons, her back to him. She swallowed a gasp. His skin was hot against hers, as if he were slightly feverish. But his arms, as they went around her, were familiar. The two of them fit together, as always, her head under his chin, her spine against the hard muscles of his chest and stomach, her legs bent around his. All right, he whispered, and the feel of his breath against the back of her neck raised goosebumps over her body. So we'll sleep. And that was all. Slowly her body relaxed, the thudding of her heart slowing. Jace's arms around her felt the way they always had. Comfortable. She closed her hands around his and shut her eyes. Imagining their bed cut free of this strange prison, floating through space or on the surface of the ocean. Just the two of them, alone. She slept like that. Her head tucked under Jace's chin. Her spine fitted to his body. Their legs entwined. It was the best sleep she had had in weeks. Simon sat on the edge of the bed in Magnus's spare room, staring down at the duffel bag in his lap. He could hear voices from the living room. Magnus was explaining to Maya and Jordan what had happened that night, with Izzy occasionally interjecting a detail. Jordan was saying something about how they should order Chinese food so they wouldn't starve. Maya laughed, and said as long as it wasn't from the Jade Wolf, that would be fine. Starving, Simon thought. He was getting hungry. Hungry enough to have begun to feel it, like a pull on his veins. It was a different kind of hunger than human hunger. He felt scraped out, a hollow emptiness inside. If you struck him, he thought, he would ring like a bell. Simon? His door opened, and Isabel slid inside. Her black hair was down and loose, almost reaching her waist. Are you okay? I'm fine. She saw the duffel bag on his lap, and her shoulders tensed. Are you leaving? Well, I wasn't planning to stay forever, Simon said. I mean, last night was different. You asked. Right, she said, in an unnaturally bright voice. Well, you can get a ride back with Jordan, at least. Did you notice him and Maya, by the way? Notice what about them? She lowered her voice. Something definitely happened between them on their little road trip. They're all coupley now. Well, that's good. Are you jealous? Jealous? He echoed, confused. Well, you and Maya. She waved a hand, looking up at him through her lashes. You were... Oh, no, not at all. I'm glad for Jordan. This will make him really happy. He meant it, too. Good. Isabel looked up then, and he saw that her cheeks were rosy red, and not just from the cold. Would you stay here tonight, Simon? With you? She nodded, not looking at him. Alec's going out to get some more of his clothes from the Institute. He asked if I wanted to go back with him. But I'd rather stay here with you. She raised her chin, looking at him directly. I don't want to sleep by myself. If I stay here, Will you stay with me? He could tell how much she hated to ask. Of course, he said, as lightly as he possibly could, pushing the thought of his hunger out of his head, or trying to. The last time he had tried to forget to drink, it had ended with Jordan pulling him off a semi-conscious marine. But that was when he hadn't eaten for days. This was different. He knew his limits. He was sure of it. Of course, he said again. That would be great. Camille smirked up at Alec from her divan.
So, where does Magnus think you are now?
Alec, who had put a plank of wood across two cinder blocks to form a sort of bench, stretched his long legs out and looked at his boots. At the Institute, picking up clothes. I was going to go up to Spanish Harlem, but I came here instead. Her eyes narrowed.
And why is that?
Because I can't do it. I can't kill Raphael. Camille threw up her hands.
And why not? Have you some sort of personal bond with him?
I barely know him, Alec said. But killing him is deliberately breaking covenant law. Not that I haven't broken laws before, but there's a difference between breaking them for good reason and breaking them for selfish ones.
Oh, dear God. Camille began to pace. Spare me from Nephilim with consciences.
I'm sorry. Her eyes narrowed.
Sorry? I'll make you.
She broke off.
Alexander, she went on in a more composed voice. What of Magnus? If you continue as you have been, you will lose him.
Alec watched her as she moved, cat-like and composed, her face blank of anything now but a curious sympathy.
Where was Magnus born?
Camille laughed.
You don't even know that? My goodness, Batavia, if you must know.
She snorted at his look of incomprehension.
Indonesia. Of course, it was the Dutch East Indies then. His mother was a native, I believe. His father was some dull colonial. Well, not his real father.
Her lips curved into a smile. Who was his real father?
Magnus's father? Why, a demon, of course.
Yes, but which demon?
How could it possibly matter, Alexander?
I get the feeling, Alec went on stubbornly, that he's a pretty powerful high-up demon, but Magnus won't talk about him. Camille collapsed back onto the divan with a sigh.
Well, of course he won't. One must preserve some mystery in one's relationship, Alec Lightwood. A book that one has not read yet is always more exciting than a book one has memorized.
You mean I tell him too much? Alec pounced on the morsel of advice. Somewhere here, inside this cold, beautiful shell of a woman, was someone who had shared a unique experience with him. Of loving and being loved by Magnus. Surely she must know something, some secret, some key that would keep him from screwing everything up.
Almost certainly. Although you've been alive for such a short time that I can't imagine how much there could be to say.
Certainly you must be out of anecdotes. Well, it seems clear to me that your policy of not telling him anything didn't work out either.
I was not so invested in keeping him as you are.
Well, Alec asked, knowing it was a bad idea, but not being able to help it. If you had been interested in keeping him, what would you have done differently? Camille sighed dramatically.
The thing that you are too young to understand is that we all hide things. We hide them from our lovers because we wish to present our best selves, but also because, if it is real love, we expect our loved one to simply understand it without needing to ask. In a true partnership, the kind that lasts through the ages, there is an unspoken communion.
But, Alec stammered, I would have thought he would have wanted me to open up. I mean, I have a hard time being open, even with people I've known my whole life. like Isabel or Jace. Camille snorted.
That's another thing, she said. You no longer need other people in your life once you have found your true love. No wonder Magnus feels he cannot open up to you when you rely so heavily upon these other people. When love is true, you should meet each other's every desire, every need. Are you listening, young Alexander? For my advice is precious and not given often.
The room was filled with translucent dawn light. Clary sat up, watching Jace as he slept. He was on his side, his hair a pale brass color in the bluish air. His cheek was pillowed on his hand, like a child's. The star-shaped scar on his shoulder was revealed, and so were the patterns of old runes up and down his arms, back, and sides. She wondered if other people would find the scars as beautiful as she did, or if she only saw them that way because she loved him and they were a part of him. Each one told the story of a moment. Some had even saved his life. He murmured in his sleep and turned over onto his back. His hand, the Voyance rune clear and black on the back of it, was splayed across his stomach, and above it was the one rune that Clary did not find beautiful. Lilith's rune, the one that bound him to Sebastian. It seemed a pulse, like Isabel's ruby necklace, like a second heart. Silent as a cat, she moved up the bed and onto her knees. She reached up and pulled the Herondale dagger from the wall. The photograph of her and Jace together fluttered free, spinning in the air before landing face down on the floor. She swallowed and looked back at him. Even now, he was so alive. He seemed to glow from inside, as if lit by inner fire. The scar on his chest pulsed its steady beat. She lifted the knife. Clary came awake with a start, her heart slamming against her ribcage. The room swung around her like a carousel. It was still dark, and Jace's arm was around her, his breath warm on the back of her neck. She could feel his heartbeat against her spine. She closed her eyes, swallowing against the bitter taste in her mouth. It was a dream. Just a dream. But there was no way she was getting back to sleep now. She sat up carefully, gently moving Jace's arm away, and climbed off the bed. The floor was icy cold, and she winced as her bare feet touched it. She found the knob of the bedroom door in the half-light and swung it open, and froze. Though there were no windows in the hallway outside, it was lit by pendant chandeliers. Puddles of something that looked sticky and dark marred the floor. Along one painted wall was the clear mark of a bloody handprint. Blood spattered the wall at intervals leading to the stairs, where there was a single, long, dark smear. Clary looked toward Sebastian's room. It was quiet, the door shut, no light showing beneath it. She thought of the blonde girl in the spangled top, looking up at him. She looked at the bloody handprint again. It was like a message, a hand thrust out, saying, "Stop." And then Sebastian's door opened. He stepped out. He was wearing a thermal shirt over black jeans, and his silver-white hair was rumpled. He was yawning. He did a double take when he saw her, and a look of genuine surprise passed over his face. "What are you doing up?" Clary sucked in a breath. The air tasted metallic. "What am I doing? What are you doing?" "Going downstairs to get some towels to clean up this mess," he said matter-of-factly. "Vampires and their games." "This doesn't look like the outcome of a game," Clary said. "The girl, the human girl who was with you, what happened to her?" "She got a little frightened at the sight of fangs. Sometimes they do." At the look on her face, he laughed. "She came around, even wanted more. She's asleep in my bed now, if you want to check and make sure she's alive. No, that's not necessary. Clary dropped her eyes. She wished she'd worn something besides a silk nightgown to bed. She felt undressed. What about you? Are you asking if I'm all right? She hadn't been, but Sebastian looked pleased. He pulled the collar of his shirt aside, and she could see two neat puncture wounds just at his collarbone. I could use an Arazi. Clary said nothing. Come downstairs, he said, and gestured for her to follow him as he padded past her, barefoot, and down the glass staircase. After a moment, she did as he'd asked. He flicked on the lights as he went, so by the time they reached the kitchen, it was glowing with warm light. Wine? He said to her, pulling the refrigerator door open. She settled herself on one of the counter stools, smoothing down her nightgown. Just water. She watched him as he poured two glasses of mineral water, one for her, one for him. His smooth, economical movements were like Jocelyn's, but the control with which he moved must have been instilled in him by Valentine. It reminded her of the way Jace moved, like a carefully trained dancer. He pushed her water toward her with one hand, the other tipping his glass toward his lips. When he was done, he slammed the glass back down on the counter. You probably know this, but fooling around with vampires certainly makes you thirsty. Why would I know that? Her question came out sharper than intended. He shrugged. Figured you were playing some biting games with that daylighter. Simon and I never played biting games, she said in a frozen tone. In fact, I can't figure out why anyone would want vampires feeding on them on purpose. Don't you hate and despise downworlders? No, he said. Don't mix me up with Valentine. Yeah, she muttered. Tough mistake to make. It's not my fault I look exactly like him and you look like her. His mouth curled into an expression of distaste at the thought of Jocelyn. Clary scowled at him. See? There you go. You're always looking at me like that. Like what? Like I burn down animal shelters for fun and light my cigarettes with orphans. He poured another glass of water. As he turned his head from her, she saw that the puncture wounds at his throat were already beginning to heal over. You killed a child, she said sharply, knowing as she said it that she should be keeping her mouth shut, going along with the pretense that she didn't think Sebastian was a monster. But Max, he was alive in her head as if it were the first time she'd ever seen him, asleep on a sofa at the Institute, with a book on his lap and his glasses askew on his small face. That's not something you can be forgiven for. Ever. Sebastian drew in a breath. So that's it, he said. Cards on the table so soon, little sister? What do you think? Her voice sounded thin and tired to her own ears, but he flinched as if she had snapped at him. Would you believe me if I told you it was an accident? He said, setting his glass down on the counter. I didn't mean to kill him, just to knock him out, so he wouldn't tell. Clary silenced him with a look. She knew she couldn't hide the hatred in her eyes. Knew she should, knew it was impossible. I mean it. I meant to knock him out, like I did Isabel. I misjudged my own strength. And Sebastian Verlac? The real one? You killed him, didn't you? Sebastian looked at his own hands as if they were strange to him. There was a silver chain holding a flat metal plate, like an ID bracelet, around his right wrist, hiding the scar where Isabel had sliced his hand away. He wasn't supposed to fight back. Disgusted, Clary started to slide off the stool, but Sebastian caught her wrist, pulling her toward him. His skin was hot against hers, and she remembered, in Idris, the time his touch had burned her. Jonathan Morgenstern killed Max. But what if I'm not the same person? Haven't you noticed I won't even use the same name? Let me go. You believe Jace is different? Sebastian said quietly. You believe he isn't the same person, that my blood changed him, don't you? She nodded without speaking.
Then why is it so hard to believe it might go the other way? Maybe his blood changed me. Maybe I'm not the same person I was.
You stabbed Luke, she said. Someone I care about. Someone I love.
He was about to blow me to pieces with a shotgun, said Sebastian.
You love him.
I don't know him. I was saving my life and Jace's.
Do you really not understand that?
And maybe you're just saying whatever you think you need to say to get me to trust you.
Would the person I used to be care if you trusted me?
If you wanted something.
Maybe I just want a sister. At that, her eyes flicked up to his, involuntary, disbelieving.
You don't know what a family is, she said, or what you'd do with a sister if you had one.
I do have one. His voice was low. There were blood stains at the collar of his shirt, just where it touched his skin.
I'm giving you a chance to see that what Jace and I are doing is the right thing. Can you give me a chance?
She thought of the Sebastian she had known in Idris. She had heard him sound amused, friendly, detached, ironic, intense, and angry. She had never heard him sound pleading.
Jace trusts you, he said, but I don't. He believes you love him enough to throw everything you've ever valued or believed in to come and be with him, no matter what.
Her jaw tightened.
And how do you know I wouldn't?
He laughed.
Because you're my sister.
We're nothing alike, she spat, and saw the slow smile on his face. She bit back the rest of her words, but it was already too late.
That's what I would have said, he said.
But come on, Clary. You're here. You can't go back. You've thrown your lot in with Jace. You might as well do it wholeheartedly. Be a part of what's happening. Then you can make up your own mind about me.
Not looking at him, but down at the marble floor, she nodded, very slightly.
He reached up and brushed away the hair that had fallen into her eyes, and the kitchen lights sparked off the bracelet he wore, the one she had noticed before, with letters etched into it. Arcaronta movebo. Boldly, she put her hand on his wrist.
What does this mean?
He looked at her hand where it touched the silver on his wrist.
It means thus always to tyrants.
I wear it to remind me of the clave. It said this was shouted by the Romans who murdered Caesar before he could become a dictator.
Traitors, said Clary, dropping her hand.
Sebastian's dark eyes flashed.
Or fighters for freedom.
History gets written by the winners, little sis. And you intend to write this portion? He grinned at her, his dark eyes alight.
You bet I do.
Chapter 12. The Stuff of Heaven. When Alec returned to Magnus's apartment, all the lights were off, but the living room was glowing with a blue-white flame. It took him several moments to realize it was coming from the pentagram. He kicked his shoes off by the door and padded as quietly as he could into the master bedroom. The room was dark, a strand of multicolored Christmas lights wrapped around the window frame, the only illumination. Magnus was asleep on his back, the covers pulled up to his waist, his hand flat against his belly button-free stomach. Alec quickly stripped down to his boxers and climbed into bed, hoping not to wake Magnus. Unfortunately, he hadn't counted on Chairman Meow, who had tucked himself under the covers. Alec's elbow came down squarely on the cat's tail, and the chairman yowled and darted off the bed, causing Magnus to sit up, blinking.
What's going on?
Nothing, Alec said, silently cursing all cats.
I couldn't sleep.
So you went out? Magnus rolled onto his side and touched Alec's bare shoulder.
Your skin is cold, and you smell like nighttime.
I was walking around, Alec said, glad it was too dim in the room for Magnus to really see his face. He knew he was a terrible liar.
Around where? One must preserve some mystery in one's relationship, Alec Lightwood.
Places, Alec said airily. You know, mysterious places.
Mysterious places?
Alec nodded. Magnus flopped back against the pillows.
I see you went to Crazy Town, he muttered, closing his eyes. Did you bring me anything back?
Alec leaned over and kissed Magnus on the mouth.
Just that, he said softly, drawing back.
But Magnus, who had started to smile, already had hold of his arms.
Well, if you're going to wake me up, he said,
you might as well make it worth my time. And he pulled Alec down on top of him. Considering they'd already spent one night in bed together, Simon hadn't expected his second night with Isabel to be quite so awkward. But then again, this time Isabel was sober and awake and obviously expecting something from him. The problem was, he wasn't sure exactly what. He had given her a button-down shirt of his to wear, and he looked away politely while she climbed under the blanket and edged back against the wall, giving him plenty of space. He didn't bother changing, just took off his shoes and socks and crawled in next to her in his t-shirt and jeans. They lay side by side for a moment, and then Isabel rolled against him, draping an arm awkwardly across his side. Their knees bumped together. One of Isabel's toenails scratched his ankle. He tried to move forward, and their foreheads knocked.
Ouch! Isabel said indignantly. Shouldn't you be better at this?
Simon was bewildered.
Why?
All those nights you've spent in Clary's bed, wrapped in your beautiful platonic embraces, she said, pressing her face against his shoulder so her voice was muffled.
I figured...
We just slept, said Simon. He didn't want to say anything about how Clary fit perfectly against him, about how being in a bed with her was as natural as breathing, about the way the scent of her hair reminded him of childhood and sunshine and simplicity and grace. That, he had a feeling, would not be helpful.
I know, but I don't just sleep, Isabel said irritably, with anybody. I don't stay the night usually at all, like ever.
You said you wanted to...
Oh, shut up, she said, and kissed him.
This was marginally more successful. He'd kissed Isabel before. He loved the texture of her soft lips, the way his hands felt in her long, dark hair. But as she pressed herself against him, he also felt the warmth of her body, her long, bare legs against him, the pulse of her blood, and the snap of his fanged teeth as they came out. He pulled back hastily.
Now what is it? You don't want to kiss me?
I do, he tried to say, but his fangs were in the way. Isabel's eyes widened.
Oh, you're hungry, she said. When was the last time you had any blood?
Yesterday, he managed to say, with some difficulty. She lay back against his pillow. Her eyes were impossibly big and black and lustrous.
Maybe you should feed yourself, she said. You know what happens if you don't.
I don't have any blood with me. I'll have to go back to the apartment, Simon said. His fangs had already begun to retract. Isabel caught him by the arm.
You don't have to drink cold animal blood. I'm right here.
The shock of her words was like a pulse of energy zipping through his body, setting his nerves on fire.
You're not serious.
Sure I am. She started to unbutton the shirt she was wearing, baring her throat, her collarbone, the tracery of faint veins visible beneath her pale skin. The shirt fell open, her blue bra covered a lot more than many bikinis might, but Simon still felt his mouth go dry. Her ruby flashed like a red stoplight below her collarbone. "Isabel." As if reading his mind, she reached up and drew her hair back, draping it over one shoulder, leaving the side of her throat naked. "Don't you want?" He caught her wrist.
"Isabel, don't," he said urgently. "I can't control myself. Can't control it. I could hurt you, kill you."
Her eyes shone.
"You won't. You can hold yourself back. You did with Jace."
"I'm not attracted to Jace."
"Not even a little?"
she said hopefully.
"Eensy bit? Because that would be kind of hot."
"Ah, well, too bad."
"Look, attracted or not, you bit him when you were starving and dying, and you still held back."
"I didn't hold back with Maureen. Jordan had to pull me off."
"You would have."
She took her finger and pressed it to his lips, then ran it down his throat, across his chest, coming to a stop where his heart had once beat.
"I trust you. Maybe you shouldn't. I'm a shadow hunter. I can fight you off if I have to."
"Jace didn't fight me off."
"Jace is in love with the idea of dying," said Isabel.
"I'm not." She slung her legs around his hips. She was amazingly flexible, and slid forward until she could brush her lips against his.
He wanted to kiss her, wanted it so badly his whole body ached.
He opened his mouth tentatively, touched his tongue to hers, and felt a sharp pain. His tongue had slid along the razor edge of his fang. He tasted his own blood and drew back abruptly, turning his face away from her.
"Isabel, I can't."
He closed his eyes. She was warm and soft in his lap, teasing, torturous. His fangs ached painfully. His whole body felt like sharp wires were twisting through his veins.
"I don't want you to see me like this."
"Simon." Gently, she touched his cheek, turning his face toward her.
"This is who you are."
His fangs had retracted, slowly, but they still ached. He hid his face in his hands and spoke between his fingers.
"You can't possibly want this. You can't possibly want me.
My own mother threw me out of the house. I bit Maureen. She was only a kid. I mean, look at me. Look what I am, where I live, what I do. I'm nothing."
Isabel stroked his hair lightly.
He looked at her between his fingers. Up close, he could see that her eyes weren't black, but a very dark brown, flecked with gold. He was sure he could see pity in them. He didn't know what he expected her to say. Isabel used boys and threw them away. Isabel was beautiful and tough and perfect and didn't need anything. Least of all a vampire who wasn't even very good at being a vampire. He could feel her breathing. She smelled sweet. Blood, mortality, gardenias.
"You're not nothing," she said.
"Simon, please, let me see your face." Reluctantly, he lowered his hands. He could see her more clearly now. She looked soft and lovely in the moonlight, her skin pale and creamy, her hair like a black waterfall. She unlooped her hands from around his neck.
"Look at these," she said, touching the white scars of healed marks that snowflaked her silvery skin,
on her throat, on her arms, on the curves of her breasts.
"Ugly, aren't they?"
"Nothing about you is ugly, Izzy," said Simon, honestly shocked.
"Girls aren't supposed to be covered in scars," Isabel said matter-of-factly.
"But they don't bother you."
"They're part of you."
"No, of course they don't bother me." She touched his lips with her fingers.
"Being a vampire is part of you.
I didn't ask you to come here last night because I couldn't think of anyone else to ask. I want to be with you, Simon. It scares the hell out of me. but I do." Her eyes shimmered, and before he could wonder for more than a moment whether it was with tears, he had leaned forward and kissed her. This time it wasn't awkward. This time she leaned into it, and he was suddenly under her, rolling her on top of him. Her long black hair fell down around them both like a curtain. She whispered to him softly as he ran his hands up her back. He could feel her scars under his fingertips, and he wanted to tell her he thought of them as ornaments, testaments to her bravery that only made her more beautiful. But that would have meant stopping kissing her, and he didn't want to do that. She was moaning and moving in his arms. Her fingers were in his hair as the two of them rolled sideways, and now she was under him, and his arms were full of the softness and warmth of her, and his mouth with the taste of her, and the scent of her skin, salt and perfume and blood. He stiffened again, all over, and Isabel felt it. She caught hold of his shoulders. She was luminous in the darkness. "Go ahead," she whispered. He could feel her heart slamming against his chest. "I want you to." He closed his eyes, pressed his forehead to hers, tried to calm himself. His fangs were back, pushing into his lower lip, hard and painful. "No." Her long, perfect legs wrapped around him, her ankles locking, holding him to her. "I want you to." Her breasts flattened against his chest as she arched up against him, baring her throat. The scent of her blood was everywhere, all over him, filling the room. "Aren't you scared?" he whispered. "Yes, but I still want you to." "Isabel, I can't." He bit her. His teeth slid, razor sharp, into the vein at her throat, like a knife slicing into the skin of an apple. Blood exploded into his mouth. It was like nothing he had experienced before. With Jace, he had been barely alive. With Maureen, the guilt had crushed him even as he had drunk from her. He had certainly never had the sense that either of the people he had bitten had liked it. But Isabel gasped, her eyes flying open and her body arcing up against him. She purred like a cat, stroking his hair, his back, little urgent movement of her hands saying, "Don't stop, don't stop." He poured out of her, into him, lighting his body. He had never felt, imagined anything else like it. He could feel the strong, sure beat of her heat pounding through her veins into his, and for that moment it was as if he lived again, and his heart contracted with pure elation. He broke away. He wasn't sure how, but he broke away and rolled onto his back, his fingers digging hard into the mattress at his sides. He was still shuddering as his fangs retracted. The room shimmered all around him, the way things did in the few moments after he drank human, living blood. "Is he?" he whispered. He was afraid to look at her, afraid that now that his teeth were no longer in her throat, she would stare at him with revulsion and horror. "What?" "You didn't stop me," he said. It was a half-accusation, half-hope. "I didn't want to." He looked at her. She was on her back, her chest rising and falling fast, as if she'd been running. There were two neat puncture wounds in the side of her throat, and two thin lines of blood that ran down her neck to her collarbone. Obeying an instinct that seemed to run deep under the skin, Simon leaned forward and licked the blood from her throat, tasting salt, tasting Isabel. She shuddered, her fingers fluttering in his hair. "Simon." He drew back. She was looking at him with her big dark eyes, very serious, her cheeks flushed. "I..." "What?" For a wild moment, he thought she was going to say, "I love you." But instead, she shook her head, yawned, and hooked her finger through one of the belt loops on his jeans. Her fingers played with the bare skin at his waist. Somewhere, Simon had heard that yawning was a sign of blood loss. He panicked. Are you okay? Did I drink too much? Do you feel tired? She scooted closer to him.
I am fine. You made yourself stop. And I'm a shadow hunter. We replace blood at triple the rate a normal human being does.
Did you... He could barely bring himself to ask. Did you like it?
Yeah. Her voice was husky. I liked it.
Really? She giggled.
You couldn't tell?
I thought maybe you were faking it.
She raised herself up on one elbow and looked down at him with her glowing dark eyes. How could eyes be dark and bright at the same time?
I don't fake things, Simon, she said. And I don't lie, and I don't pretend.
You're a heartbreaker, Isabel Lightwood, he said, as lightly as he could with her blood still running through him like fire.
Jace told Clary once you'd walk all over me in high-heeled boots.
That was then. You're different now.
She eyed him.
You're not scared of me.
He touched her face. And you're not scared of anything.
I don't know. Her hair fell forward. Maybe you'll break my heart.
Before he could say anything, she kissed him, and he wondered if she could taste her own blood.
Now shut up. I want to sleep, she said,
and she curled up against his side and closed her eyes.
Somehow, now they fit, where they hadn't before. Nothing was awkward, or poking into him, or banging against his leg. It didn't feel like childhood and sunlight and gentleness. It felt strange and heated and exciting and powerful and different.
Simon lay awake, his eyes on the ceiling, his hand stroking Isabel's silky black hair absently. He felt like he'd been caught up in a tornado and deposited somewhere very far away, where nothing was familiar. Eventually, he turned his head and kissed Izzy, very lightly, on the forehead. She stirred and murmured, but didn't open her eyes. When Clary woke in the morning, Jace was still asleep, curled on his side, his arm outstretched just enough to touch her shoulder. She kissed his cheek and got to her feet. She was about to pad into the bathroom to take a shower when she was overcome by curiosity. She went quietly to the bedroom door and peered out. The blood on the hallway wall was gone, the plaster unmarked. It was so clean, she wondered if the whole thing had been a dream. The blood, the conversation in the kitchen with Sebastian, all of it. She took a step across the corridor, placed her hand against the wall where the bloody handprint had been.
Good morning.
She whirled. It was her brother. He had come out of his room soundlessly and was standing in the middle of the hall, regarding her with a crooked smile. He looked freshly showered, damp. His fair hair was the color of silver, almost metallic.
You planning to wear that all the time? He asked, eyeing her nightgown.
No, I was just... She didn't want to say she'd been checking to see if there was still blood in the hall. He just looked at her, amused and superior. Clary backed away. I'm going to get dressed. He said something after her, but she didn't pause to hear what it was, just darted back into Jace's bedroom and closed the door behind her. A moment later, she heard voices in the hallway. Sebastian's again, and a girl's, speaking musical Italian. The girl from last night, she thought. The one he'd said was asleep in his room. It was only then that she realized how much she'd suspected he was lying. But he'd been telling the truth. I'm giving you a chance, he'd said. Can you give me a chance? Could she? This was Sebastian they were talking about. She mulled it over feverishly while she showered and dressed carefully. The clothes in the wardrobe, having been selected for Jocelyn, were so far from her usual style that it was hard to choose what to wear. She found a pair of jeans, designer, from the price tag still attached, and a dotted silk shirt with a bow at the neck that had a vintage feel she liked. She threw her own velvet jacket on over it and headed back to Jace's room. But he was gone, and it wasn't hard to guess where. The rattle of dishes, the sound of laughter, and the smell of cooking floated up from downstairs. She took the glass stairs two at a time, but paused on the bottom step, looking into the kitchen. Sebastian was leaning against the refrigerator, arms crossed, and Jace was making something in a pan that involved onions and eggs. He was barefoot, his hair messy, his shirt buttoned haphazardly, and the sight of him made her heart turn over. She had never seen him like this, first thing in the morning, still with that warm golden aura of sleep clinging to him. And she felt a piercing sadness that all these firsts were happening with a Jace who wasn't really her Jace. Even if he did look happy, eyes shadow-free, laughing as he flipped the eggs in the pan and slid an omelet onto a plate. Sebastian said something to him, and Jace looked over at Clary and smiled.
Scrambled or fried?
Scrambled.
I didn't know you could make eggs.
She came down from the steps and over to the kitchen counter. Sun was streaming through the windows. Despite the lack of clocks in the house, she guessed it was late morning, and the kitchen glittered in glass and chrome.
Who can't make eggs?
Jace wondered aloud. Clary raised her hand, and at the same time so did Sebastian. She couldn't help a little jerk of surprise and put her arm down hastily, but not before Sebastian had seen and grinned. It was always grinning. She wished she could slap it off his face. She looked away from him and busied herself putting together a breakfast plate from what was on the table. Bread, fresh butter, jam, and sliced bacon, the chewy round kind. There was juice, too, and tea. They ate pretty well here, she thought. Although, if Simon was anything to go by, teenage boys were always hungry. She glanced toward the window and did a double take. The view was no longer of a canal, but of a hill rising in the distance, topped by a castle.
Where are we now? She asked.
Prague, said Sebastian. Jace and I have an errand to do here. He glanced out the window. We should probably get going soon, in fact. She smiled sweetly at him.
Can I come with you?
Sebastian shook his head. No.
Why not?
Clary crossed her arms over her chest. Is this some manly bonding thing I can't be a part of?
Are you getting matching haircuts?
Jace handed her a plate with scrambled eggs on it, but he was looking at Sebastian.
Maybe she could come, he said.
I mean, this particular errand, it's not dangerous. Sebastian's eyes were like the woods in the Frost poem, dark and deep. They gave nothing away. Anything can turn dangerous.
Well, it's your decision, Jace shrugged, reached for a strawberry, popped it into his mouth, and sucked the juice off his fingers.
Now that, Clary thought, was a clear and absolute difference between this Jace and hers. Her Jace had a ferocious and all-consuming curiosity about everything. He would never shrug and go along with someone else's plan. He was like the ocean, ceaselessly throwing itself against a rocky shore. And this Jace was a calm river shining in the sun.
Because he's happy?
Clary's hand tensed on her fork, her knuckles whitening. She hated that little voice in her head. Like the Seelie Queen, it planted doubts where there shouldn't be doubts, asked questions that had no answer.
I'm going to get my stuff.
After grabbing another berry off the plate, Jace popped it into his mouth and shot upstairs. Clary craned her head up. The clear glass step seemed invisible, making it look like he was flying upward, not running.
You're not eating your eggs.
It was Sebastian. He'd come around the counter, still noiselessly, damn it, and was looking at her, his eyebrows raised.
I don't actually like eggs, she confessed.
But you didn't want to tell Jace that, because he seemed so pleased to be making you breakfast. Since this was accurate, Clary said nothing. Funny, isn't it? Said Sebastian. The lies good people tell. He'll probably make you eggs every day for the rest of your life now, and you'll choke them down because you can't tell him you don't like them. Clary thought of the Seely Queen. Love makes liars of us all. Exactly. Quick study, aren't you? He took a step toward her, and an anxious tingle seared her nerves. He was wearing the same cologne Jace wore. She recognized the citrusy black pepper scent, but on him it smelled different. Wrong, somehow. We have that in common, Sebastian said, and began to unbutton his shirt. She stood up hastily. What are you doing? Easy there, little sis. He popped the last button, and his shirt hung open. He smiled lazily. You're the magical rune girl, aren't you? Clary nodded slowly. I want a strength rune, he said. And if you are the best, I want it from you. You wouldn't deny your big brother a rune, would you? His dark eyes raked her. Besides, you want me to give you a chance. And you want me to give you a chance, she said. So I'll make you a deal. I'll give you a strength rune if you let me come with you on your errand. He stripped the shirt the rest of the way off and dropped it onto the counter. Deal. I don't have a steely. She didn't want to look at him, but it was hard not to. He seemed to be deliberately invading her personal space. His body was much like Jace's, hard, without any extra ounce of flesh anywhere, the muscles showing clearly under the skin. He was scarred like Jace, too, though he was so pale that the white marks stood out less than they did against Jace's gold skin. On her brother, they were like silver pin on white paper. He drew a steely from his belt and handed it to her. Use mine. All right, she said. Turn around. He did, and she swallowed back a gasp. His bare back was striped with ragged scars, one after the other. Too even to be random accident. Whip marks. Who did this to you? She said. Who do you think? Our father, he said. He used a whip made of demon metal, so no Irazi could heal them. They're meant to remind me. Remind you of what? Of the perils of obedience. She touched one. It felt hot under her fingertips. As if newly made and rough, where the skin around it was smooth. Don't you mean disobedience? I mean what I said. Do they hurt? All the time. Impatiently, he glanced back over his shoulder. What are you waiting for? Nothing. She set the tip of the steely to his shoulder blade, trying to keep her hand steady. Part of her mind raced, thinking how easy it would be to mark him with something that would damage him, sicken him, twist his insides. But what would happen to Jace if she did? Shaking her hair out of her face, she carefully drew the Fortis rune at the juncture of his shoulder blade and back, just where, if he were an angel, he would have wings. When she was done, he turned and took the steely from her, then shrugged his shirt back on. She didn't expect a thank you, and didn't get one. He rolled his shoulders back as he buttoned the shirt and grinned. You are good, he said, but that was all. A moment later, the steps rattled, and Jace returned, shrugging on a suede jacket. He had clipped on his weapons belt, too, and wore fingerless dark gloves. Clary smiled at him with a warmth she didn't feel. Sebastian says I can come with you. Jace raised his eyebrows. Matching haircuts for everyone? I hope not, said Sebastian. I look terrible with curls. Clary glanced down at herself. Do I need to change into gear? Not really. This isn't the sort of errand where we're expecting to have a fight. But it's good to be prepared. I'll get you something from the weapons room, said Sebastian, and vanished upstairs. Clary cursed herself silently for not having found the weapons room while she was searching. Surely it had something inside that could provide some sort of clue as to what they were planning.
Jace touched the side of her face, and she jumped. She'd nearly forgotten he was there.
You sure you want to do this?
Absolutely. I'm going stir-crazy in the house. Besides, you taught me to fight. I figure you'd want me to use it.
His lips quirked into a devilish grin. He brushed her hair back and murmured something into her ear about using what she'd learned from him. He leaned away as Sebastian joined them, his own jacket on and a weapons belt in his hand. There was a dagger thrust through it, and a serif blade. He reached out to draw Clary close to him and pulled the belt around her waist, double-looping it and settling it low on her hips. She was too surprised to push him away, and he was done before she had the chance. Turning away, he moved toward the wall, where the outline of a doorway had appeared, shimmering like a doorway in a dream. They stepped through it. A soft knock on the library door made Maris raise her head. It was a cloudy day, dim outside the library windows, and the green-shaded lamps cast small pools of light in the circular room. She couldn't say how long she'd been sitting behind the desk. Empty coffee mugs littered the surface in front of her. She rose to her feet.
Come in!
There was a soft click as the door opened, but no sound of footsteps. A moment later, a parchment-robed figure glided into the room, his hood raised, shadowing his face.
You called on us, Maris Lightwood?
Maris rolled her shoulders back. She felt cramped and tired and old.
Brother Zachariah, I was expecting... Well, it doesn't matter.
Brother Enoch? He is senior to me. But I thought perhaps that your call might have something to do with the disappearance of your adoptive son. I have a particular interest in his well-being.
She looked at him curiously. Most Silent Brothers didn't editorialize or speak of their personal feelings, if they had any. Smoothing her tangled hair back, she stepped out from behind the desk.
Very well. I want to show you something.
She had never really gotten used to the Silent Brothers, to the soundless way they moved, as if their feet didn't touch the ground. Zachariah seemed to hover beside her as she led him across the library to a map of the world tacked to the north wall. It was a Shadowhunter map. It showed Idris in the center of Europe and the ward around it as a border of gold. On a shelf below the map were two objects. One was a shard of glass crusted with dry blood. The other was a worn leather cuff bracelet, decorated with the rune for angelic power.
These are Jace Herendel's cuff and Jonathan Morgenstern's blood. I understood attempts to track them were unsuccessful.
It isn't tracking precisely. Maris straightened her shoulders. When I was in the circle, there was a mechanism Valentine used by which he could locate us all. Unless we were in certain protected places, he knew where we were at all times. I thought there was a chance he might have done the same to Jace when he was a child. He never seemed to have trouble finding him.
What kind of mechanism do you speak of?
A mark. Not one from the Grey Book. We all had it. I had nearly forgotten about it. After all, there was no way to get rid of it.
If Jace had it, would he not know of it and take steps to prevent you using it to find him?
Maris shook her head. It could be as small as a tiny, almost invisible white mark under his hair, as mine is. He would not have known he had it. Valentine wouldn't have wanted to tell him. Brother Zachariah moved apart from her, examining the map.
And what has been the result of your experiment?
Jace has it, Maris said, but she did not sound pleased or triumphant. I've seen him on the map. When he appears, the map flares, like a spark of light in the location where he is, and his cuff flares at the same time. So I know it is him, and not Jonathan Morgenstern. Jonathan never appears on the map.
And where is he? Where is Jace?
I've seen him appear, just for a few seconds each time. In London, Rome, and Shanghai. Just a little while ago, he flickered into existence in Venice, and then vanished again.
How is he traveling so quickly between cities?
By portal? She shrugged. I don't know. I just know that every time the map flickers, I know he's alive. For now. And it's like I can breathe again, just for a little while. She shut her mouth decidedly, lest the other words come pouring out. How she missed Alec and Isabel, but could not bear to call them back to the Institute, where Alec at least would be expected to take responsibility in the manhunt for his own brother. How she still thought of Max every day, and it was like someone had emptied her lungs of air, and she would catch at her heart, afraid she was dying. She could not lose Jace, too.
I can understand that.
Brother Zachariah folded his hands in front of him. His hands looked young, not gnarled or bent, his fingers slender. Maris often wondered how the brothers aged and how long they lived, but that information was secret to their order.
There is little more powerful than the love of family. But what I do not know is why you choose to show this to me.
Maris took a shuddering breath. I know I should show it to the Clave, she said. But the Clave knows of his bond with Jonathan now. They are hunting them both. They will kill Jace if they find him. And yet to keep it to myself is surely treason. She hung her head. I decided that telling you, the brothers, was something I could bear. Then it is your choice whether to show it to the Clave. I can't stand that it be mine. Zachariah was silent a long moment. Then his voice, gentle in her head, said,
Your map tells you that your son is still alive. If you give it to the Clave, I do not think it will help them much, besides telling them that he is traveling fast and is impossible to track. They know that already. You keep the map. I will not speak of it for now.
Maris looked at him in astonishment. But you are a servant of the Clave.
I was once a shadow hunter like you. I lived like you do. And like you, there were those I loved enough to put their welfare before anything else, any oath, any debt.
Did you? Maris hesitated. Did you ever have children?
No. No children.
I'm sorry.
Do not be, and try not to let fear for Jace devour you. He is a Herondale, and they are survivors.
Something snapped inside Maris. He is not a Herondale. He is a Lightwood. Jace Lightwood. He's my son. There was a long pause. Then,
I did not mean to imply otherwise,
said Brother Zachariah. He unclasped his thin hands and stepped back.
There is one thing you must be aware of. If Jace appears on the map for more than a few seconds at a time, you will have to tell the Clave. You should brace yourself for the possibility.
I don't think I can, she said. They'll send hunters after him, set a trap for him. He's just a boy.
He was never just a boy,
said Zachariah, and he turned to glide from the room. Maris did not watch him go. She had returned to staring at the map.
Simon?
Relief opened like a flower in his chest. Clary's voice, tentative but familiar, filled his head. He looked sideways. Isabel was still sleeping. Midday light was visible around the edges of the curtains.
Are you awake?
He rolled onto his back, stared up at the ceiling.
Of course I'm awake. Well, I wasn't sure. You're what, 6, 7 hours behind where I am? It's twilight here.
Italy?
We're in Prague now. It's pretty.
There's a big river and a lot of buildings with spires. Looks a little like Idris from a distance. It's cold here, though. Colder than at home. Okay, enough with the weather report. Are you safe? Where are Sebastian and Jace? They're with me. I wandered off a little, though. I said I wanted to commune with the view from the bridge. So I'm the view from the bridge? She laughed, or at least he felt something that was like laughter in his head. A soft, nervous laughter. I can't take too long, though they don't really seem to suspect anything. Jace definitely doesn't. Sebastian is harder to read. I don't think he trusts me. I searched his room yesterday, but there's nothing. I mean, nothing to indicate what they're planning. Last night? Nothing. It was odd how she could be inside his head and he could still sense that she was hiding something. Sebastian has in his room the box my mom used to own, with his baby stuff in it. I can't figure out why. Don't waste your time trying to figure out Sebastian, Simon told her. He's not worth it. Figure out what they're going to do. I'm trying, she sounded irritable. Are you still at Magnus's? Yeah. We moved to phase two of our plan. Oh, yeah? What was phase one? Phase one was sitting around the table, ordering pizza, and arguing. What's phase two? Sitting around the table, drinking coffee, and arguing? Not exactly. Simon took a deep breath. We raised the demon Azazel. Azazel? Her mental voice spiked upward. Simon almost clutched at his ears. So that's what the stupid Smurf question was about. Tell me you're kidding. I'm not. It's a long story. He filled her in as best he could, watching Isabel breathe as he did, watching the light outside the window grow brighter. We thought he could help us find a weapon that can hurt Sebastian without hurting Jace. Yeah, but demon raising? Clary didn't sound convinced. And Azazel is no ordinary demon. I'm the one with Team Evil over here. You're Team Good. Keep it in mind. You know nothing's that simple, Clary. It was as if he could feel her sigh, a breath of air that passed over his skin, raising the hairs on the back of his neck. I know. Cities and rivers, Clary thought, as she took her fingers from the gold ring on her right hand and turned away from the view of the Charles Bridge back to Jace and Sebastian. They were on the other side of the old stone bridge, pointing off at something she couldn't see. The water below was the color of metal, sliding soundlessly around the bridge's ancient struts. The sky was the same color, pocked with black clouds. The wind whipped at her hair and coat as she walked over to join Sebastian and Jace. They all set off again, the two boys conversing softly. She could have joined the conversation if she wanted to, she supposed, but there was something about the still loveliness of the city, its spires rising into the mist in the distance, that made her want to be quiet, to look and to think on her own. The bridge emptied out into a twisting cobblestone street lined with tourist shops, shops selling blood-red garnets and big chunks of golden Polish amber, heavy bohemian glass, and wooden toys. Even at this hour, touts stood outside nightclubs, holding free passes or cards that would give you discounts on drinks. Sebastian gestured them aside impatiently, snapping his annoyance in check. The press of people was relieved when the street widened into an old medieval square. Despite the cold weather, it was filled with milling pedestrians and kiosks were selling sausages and hot spiced cider. The three of them stopped for food and ate around a tall rickety table while the huge astronomical clock in the square's center began to chime the hour. Clanking machinery started up, and a circle of dancing wooden figures appeared from doors on either side of the clock. The 12 apostles, Sebastian explained, as the figures whirled around and around. There's a legend, he said, leaning forward with his hands cupped around a mug of hot cider, that the king had the eyes of the clockmaker put out after this clock was finished, so he could never build anything as beautiful again. Clary shuddered and moved a little closer to Jace. He had been quiet since they'd left the bridge, as if lost in thought. People, girls mainly, stopped to look at him as they passed, his hair bright and startling among the winter dark colors of the old square.
"That's sadistic," she said.
Sebastian ran his finger around the rim of his mug and licked the cider off. "The past is another country."
"Foreign country," said Jace.
Sebastian looked at him with lazy eyes.
"What?"
"The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there," Jace said. "That's the whole quote." Sebastian shrugged and pushed his mug away. "You got a euro for returning them to the stand where you bought the cider." But Clary suspected Sebastian couldn't be bothered to fake good citizenship for a measly euro.
"Let's go."
Clary wasn't finished with her cider, but she set it down anyway and followed as Sebastian led them away from the square among a maze of narrow, twisting streets. Jace had corrected Sebastian, she thought. Certainly it had been over something minor. But wasn't Lilith's blood magic supposed to bind him to her brother in such a way that he thought everything Sebastian did was right? Could this be a sign, even a tiny sign, that the spell that connected them was starting to fade? It was stupid to hope, she knew. But sometimes hope was all you had. The streets grew narrower, darker. The clouds overhead had completely blocked out the lowering sun. And old-fashioned gas lamps burned here and there, illuminating the misty dimness. The streets had turned to cobblestones, and the sidewalks were narrowing, forcing them to walk in a line, as if they were picking their way across a narrow bridge. Only the sight of other pedestrians, appearing and disappearing out of the fog, made Clary feel that she had not stepped through some sort of warp in time into a dream city out of her own imagination. Finally, they reached an archway of stone that opened out into a small square. Most of the stores had turned off their lights, though across from them one was lit up. It said Antique Variet in gold letters, and the window was full of old display bottles of different substances, their peeling labels marked in Latin. Clary was surprised when Sebastian headed toward it. What use could they possibly have for old bottles? She dismissed the thought when they stepped over the threshold. The store inside was dimly lit and smelled of mothballs, but it was stuffed, every cranny, with an incredible selection of junk, and not junk. Beautiful celestial maps warred for space with salt and pepper shakers shaped like the figures from the clock in the old town square. There were heaps of old tobacco and cigar tins, stamps mounted in glass. Old cameras of East German and Russian design, a gorgeous cut glass bowl in a deep emerald shade sitting side by side with a stack of water-stained old calendars. An antique Czech flag hung from a mounting pole overhead. Sebastian moved forward through the stacks toward a counter in the back of the store, and Clary realized that what she had taken for a mannequin was in fact an old man, with a face as creased and wrinkled as an old bedsheet, leaning back against the counter with his arms crossed. The counter itself was glass-fronted and held heaps of vintage jewelry and sparkling glass beads, small chain purses with gem clasps, and rows of cufflinks. Sebastian said something in Czech, and the man nodded and indicated Clary and Jace with a jerk of his chin and a suspicious look. His eyes were, Clary saw, a dark red color. She narrowed her own eyes, concentrating hard, and began to strip the glamour from him. It wasn't easy. It seemed to stick to him like flypaper. In the end, she managed to pull it away only enough to see in flashes the real creature standing in front of her. Tall and human-shaped, with gray skin and ruby-red eyes, a mouth full of pointed teeth that jutted every which way, and long, serpentine arms that ended in heads like an eel's. Narrow, evil-looking, and toothy.
"Avidus demon," Jace muttered in her ear.
They're like dragons. They like to stockpile sparkly things. Junk, jewels, it's all the same to them.
Sebastian was looking back over his shoulder at Jason Clary. They're my brother and sister, he said after a moment. They are entirely to be trusted, Neric. A faint shudder ran under Clary's skin. She didn't like the idea of posing as Jace's sister, even for a demon's benefit.
I don't like this, the Vetus demon said. You said we would be dealing only with you, Morgan Stern, and while I know Valentine has a daughter...
His head dipped toward Clary.
I also know we had only one son.
He's adopted, said Sebastian breezily, gesturing toward Jace.
Adopted?
I think you'll find the definition of the modern family is really changing at an impressive pace these days, said Jace. The demon, Myrick, didn't look impressed.
I don't like this, he said again.
But you'll like this, said Sebastian, taking a pouch tied at the top from his pocket. He turned it upside down above the counter, and a clattering pile of bronze coins fell out, clinking together as they rolled across the glass. Pennies from dead men's eyes, 100 of them. Now, do you have what we agreed on? One toothed hand felt its way across the counter and bit gently at a coin. The demon's red eyes flickered over the pile.
That is all very well, but it is not enough to buy what you seek.
He gestured with an undulating arm, and above it appeared what looked to Clary like a hunk of rock crystal, only it was more luminous, more sheer, silvery, and beautiful. She realized with a jolt that it was the stuff seraph blades were made from.
Pure Adamas, Myrick said. The stuff of heaven. Priceless.
Anger crackled across Sebastian's face like lightning, and for a moment, Clary saw the vicious boy underneath, the one who had laughed while Hodge lay dying. Then the look was gone. But we agreed on a price.
We also agreed you would come alone, said Myrick.
His red eyes returned to Clary and to Jace, who hadn't moved, but whose aspect had taken on the controlled stillness of a crouching cat's.
I'll tell you what else you can give me, he said. A lock of your sister's pretty hair.
Fine, Clary said, stepping forward. You want a snip of my hair?
No! Jace moved to block her. He's a dark magician, Clary. You have no idea what he could do with a lock of your hair, or a bit of blood.
Myrick, Sebastian said slowly, not looking at Clary.
And in that moment, she wondered, if Sebastian wanted to trade a lock of her hair for the Adamas, what was to stop him? Jace had objected, but he was also compelled to do what Sebastian asked of him. In the crunch, what would win out? The compulsion, or Jace's feelings for her?
Absolutely not.
The demon blinked a slow, lizard-like blink.
Absolutely not.
You will not touch a hair on my sister's head, said Sebastian. Nor will you renege on our bargain. No one cheats Valentine Morgenstern's son. The agreed-upon price, or...
Or what? Myrick snarled. Or I'll be sorry? You are not Valentine, little boy. Now, that was a man who inspired loyalty.
No, said Sebastian, sliding a seraph blade from the belt at his waist. I am not Valentine. I do not intend to deal with demons as Valentine did. If I cannot have your loyalty, I will have your fear. Know that I am more powerful than my father ever was, and if you do not deal fairly with me, I will take your life and have what I have come for. He raised the blade he held.
Dumas,
he whispered, and the blade shot forth, shimmering like a column of fire. The demon recoiled, snapping several words in a muddy-sounding language. Jace's hand already had a dagger in it. He called out to Clary, but not fast enough. Something struck her hard on the shoulder, and she fell forward, sprawling on the cluttered floor. She flipped over onto her back, fast, looked up, and screamed. Looming over her was a massive snake, or at least it had a thick, scaled body and a head hooded like a cobra's. But its body was jointed, insectile, with a dozen skittering legs that ended in jagged claws. Clary fumbled for her weapons belt as the creature reared back, yellow venom dripping from its fangs, and struck. Simon had fallen back asleep after speaking with Clary. When he awoke again, the lights were on, and Isabel knelt on the edge of the bed, wearing jeans and a worn t-shirt she must have borrowed from Alec. It had holes in the sleeves, and the stitching around the hem was coming undone. She had the collar pulled away from her throat and was using the tip of a steely to trace a rune onto the skin of her chest, just below her collarbone. He raised himself up on his elbows. "What are you doing?" "Irazi," she said. "For this." She tucked her hair back behind her ear, and he saw the two puncture wounds he'd made in the side of her throat. As she finished the rune, they smoothed over, leaving only the faintest white flecks behind. "Are you all right?" His voice came out in a whisper, smooth. He was trying to bite back the other questions he wanted to ask. "Did I hurt you? Do you think I'm a monster now? Have I creeped you out completely?" "I'm fine. I slept a lot later than I normally ever do, but I think that's probably a good thing." Seeing his expression, Isabel slid her steely into her belt. She crawled toward Simon with a cat-like grace and positioned herself over him, her hair falling down around them. They were so close their noses touched. She looked at him unblinkingly. "Why are you so crazy?" she said. And he could feel her breath against his face, as soft as a whisper. He wanted to pull her down and kiss her. Not bite her, just kiss her. But at that exact moment, the apartment door buzzer sounded. A second later, someone knocked on the bedroom door, banged on it really, making it shake on its hinges. "Simon! Isabel!" It was Magnus. "Look, I don't care if you're asleep or doing unspeakable things to each other. Get dressed and come out into the living room. Now." Simon locked gazes with Isabel, who looked as puzzled as he did. "What's going on?" "Just get out here," Magnus said, and the sound of his retreating feet was loud as he stalked away from their room. Isabel rolled off Simon, much to his disappointment, and sighed. "What do you think it is?" "No idea," said Simon. "Emergency meeting of Team Good, I guess." He'd found the phrase amusing when Clary had used it. Isabel, though, just shook her head and sighed. "I'm not sure there is any such thing as Team Good these days," she said. Chapter 13. The Bone Chandelier. As the serpent's head drove down toward Clary, a shining blur slashed across it, almost blinding her. A seraph blade, its shimmering knife edge slicing the demon's head cleanly off. The head crumpled, spraying venom and ichor. Clary rolled to one side, but some of the toxic substance splattered onto her torso. The demon vanished before its two halves could strike the floor. Clary bit down on her cry of pain and moved to get to her feet. A hand was suddenly thrust into her field of vision and offered to pull her to her feet. Jace, she thought. But as she looked up, she realized she was staring at her brother. "Come on," said Sebastian, his hand still out. "There are more of them." She grabbed his hand and let him lift her to her feet. He was splattered with demon blood too, blackish-green stuff that burned where it touched, leaving scorched patches on his clothing. As she stared at him, one of the snake-headed things, elapid demons, she realized belatedly, remembering an illustration in a book, reared up behind him, its neck flattening out like a cobra's. Without thinking, Clary grabbed his shoulder and shoved him out of the way, hard. He staggered back as the demon struck, and Clary rose to meet it with the dagger she had yanked from her belt. She turned her body aside as she drove the dagger home, avoiding the creature's fangs. Its hiss turned to a gurgle as the blade sank in and she dragged it down, gutting the creature open the way someone might gut a fish. Burning demon blood exploded over her hand in a hot torrent. She screamed but kept her grip on the dagger as the elipid winked out of existence. She whirled around. Sebastian was fighting another of the elipids by the door of the shop. Jace was fending off two next to a display of antique ceramics. Shards of pottery littered the floor. Clary swung her arm back and threw the dagger, as Jace had taught her to. It soared through the air and struck one of the creatures in the side, sending it jittering and squeaking away from Jace. Jace whirled around and, seeing her, winked before reaching up to scissor off the head of the remaining illipid demon. Its body collapsed as it vanished, and Jace, splattered in black blood, grinned. A surge of something went through Clary, a sense of buzzing elation. Both Jace and Isabel had spoken to her of the high of battle, but she'd never really experienced it before. Now she did. She felt all-powerful, her veins humming, strength uncoiling from the base of her spine. Everything seemed to have slowed down around her. She watched as the injured elipid demon spun and turned on her, racing toward her on its insectile feet, lips already curling back from its fangs. She stepped back, yanked the antique flag from its mounting place on the wall, and slammed the end of it into the elipid's open, gaping mouth. The pole punched out through the back of the creature's skull, and the elipid disappeared, taking the flag with it. Clary laughed out loud. Sebastian, who had just finished off another demon, swung around at the noise, and his eyes widened. "Clary, stop him!" he shouted, and she spun around to see Mirik, his hands fumbling at a door set into the back of the shop. She broke into a run, yanking the Seraph blade from the belt as she went. "Nakir!" she cried, vaulting up onto the counter, and she flung herself from the top of it as her weapon exploded into brightness. She landed on the Vetus demon, knocking him to the ground. One of his eel-like arms snapped at her, and she sliced it off with a sawing motion of her blade. More black blood sprayed. The demon looked at her with red, frightened eyes. "Stop!" he wheezed. "I could give you whatever you want." "I have everything I want," she whispered, and drove her Seraph blade down. It plunged into the demon's chest, and Mirik disappeared with a hollow cry. Clary thumped to her knees on the carpet. A moment later, two heads appeared over the side of the counter, staring down at her. One golden blonde and one silver blonde. Jace and Sebastian. Jace was wide-eyed. Sebastian looked pale. "Name of the angel, Clary," he breathed. "The Adamus." "Oh, that stuff you wanted? It's right here." It had rolled partly under the counter. Clary held it up now, a luminous chunk of silver, smeared where her bloody hands had touched it. Sebastian swore with relief and grabbed the Adamus out of her hand as Jace vaulted over the counter in a single movement and landed beside Clary. He knelt down and pulled her close, running his hands over her, his eyes dark with concern. She caught at his wrists. "I'm all right," she said. Her heart was pounding, her blood still singing in her veins. He opened his mouth to say something, but she leaned forward and put her hands on either side of his face, her nails digging in. "I feel good." She looked at him, rumpled and sweaty and bloody as he was, and wanted to kiss him. She wanted... "All right, you two," said Sebastian. Clary pulled away from Jace and glanced up at her brother. He was grinning down at them, lazily spinning the Adamus in one hand. "Tomorrow we use this," he said, nodding toward it. "But tonight, once we're cleaned up a little, we celebrate." Simon padded barefoot out into the living room, Isabel behind him, to find a surprising tableau. The circle and the pentagram in the center of the floor were shining with a bright silver light, like mercury. Smoke rose from the center of it, a tall black-red column tipped with white. The whole room smelled of burning. Magnus and Alex stood outside the circle, and with them Jordan and Maya, who, given the coats and hats they were wearing, looked as if they had just arrived.
"What's going on?" Isabel asked, stretching her long limbs with a yawn. "Why is everyone watching the pentagram channel?"
"Just hang on a second," Alex said grimly. "You'll see." Isabel shrugged and added her gaze to the others. As everyone watched, the white smoke began to swirl, fast and then faster, a mini-tornado that tore across the center of the pentagram, leaving words behind it spelled out in scorch marks.
"Have you made your decision yet?"
"Huh," Simon said. "Has it been doing that all morning?" Magnus threw his arms up. He was wearing leather pants and a shirt with a zigzag metallic lightning bolt on it. "All night, too."
"Just asking the same question over and over?"
"No, it says different things. Sometimes it swears. Azazel appears to be having some fun."
"Can it hear us?"
Jordan cocked his head to the side.
"Hey there, demon guy."
The fiery letters rearranged themselves.
"Hello, werewolf."
Jordan took a step back and looked at Magnus.
"Is this normal?"
Magnus seemed deeply unhappy. "It is most decidedly not normal. I have never called up a demon as powerful as Azazel. But even so, I've been through the literature, and I can't find an example of this happening before. It's getting out of control."
"Azazel must be sent back," Alex said. "Like, permanently sent back."
He shook his head. "Maybe Jocelyn was right. No good can come from summoning demons."
"I'm pretty sure I came from someone summoning a demon," Magnus noted.
"Alec, I've done this hundreds of times. I don't know why this time would be different."
"Azazel can't get out, can he?" said Isabel.
"Of the pentagram, I mean."
"No," said Magnus. "But he shouldn't be able to be doing any of the other things he's doing, either."
Jordan leaned forward, his hands on his blue-jeaned knees.
"What's it like being in hell, dude?" he asked. "Hot or cold? I've heard both."
There was no reply.
"Good job, Jordan," said Maya. "I think you annoyed him."
Jordan poked at the edge of the pentagram. "Can it tell the future?
So, pentagram, is our band going to make it big?"
"It's a demon from hell, not a magic eight ball, Jordan," said Magnus irritably.
"And stay away from the borders of the pentagram.
Summon a demon and trap it in a pentagram, and it can't get out to harm you. But step into the pentagram, and you've put yourself in the demon's range of power."
At that moment, the pillar of smoke began to coalesce. Magnus's head whipped up, and Alex stood, almost knocking over his chair, as the smoke took on the form of Azazel. His suit formed first, a gray and silver pinstripe with elegant cuffs. And then he seemed to fill it out, his flame eyes the last thing to appear. He looked around him in evident pleasure.
"The gang's all here, I see," he said. "So, have you come to a decision?"
"We have," said Magnus. "I don't believe we'll be requiring your services. Thanks anyway."
There was a silence.
"You can go now."
Magnus wiggled his fingers in a goodbye wave.
"Ta."
"I don't think so,"
Azazel said pleasantly, whipping out his handkerchief and buffing his nails with it.
"I think I'll stay. I like it here."
Magnus sighed and said something to Alec, who went to the table and returned carrying a book, which he handed to the warlock. Magnus flipped it open and began to read.
"Damned spirit, be gone. Return thou to the realm of smoke and flame, of ash and—"
"That won't work on me," said the demon in a bored voice. "Go ahead and try, if you like. I'll still be here.
Magnus looked at him with eyes smoldering with rage. You can't force us to bargain with you.
I can try. It's hardly as if I have anything better to occupy.
Azazel broke off as a familiar shape streaked through the room. It was Chairman Meow, hot on the heels of what looked like a mouse. As everyone watched in surprise and horror, the small cat dashed through the outline of the pentagram, and Simon, acting on instinct rather than rational thought, jumped into the pentagram after him and scooped him up into his arms. Simon! He knew without turning around that it was Isabel, her cry reflexive. He turned to look at her as she clapped her hand over her mouth and looked at him with wide eyes. They were all staring. Izzy's face was drained white with horror, and even Magnus looked unsettled. Summon a demon and trap it in a pentagram, and it can't get out to harm you. But step into the pentagram, and you've put yourself in the demon's range of power. Simon felt a tap on his shoulder. He dropped Chairman Meow as he turned, and the small cat streaked out of the pentagram and across the room to hide under a sofa. Simon looked up. The massive face of Azazel loomed over him. This close, he could see the cracks in the demon's skin, like cracks in marble, and the flames deep in Azazel's pitted eyes. When Azazel smiled, Simon saw that each of his teeth was tipped with a needle of iron. Azazel exhaled. A cloud of hot sulfur spread around Simon. He was dimly aware of Magnus's voice, rising and falling in a chant, and Isabel screaming something as the demon's hands clamped around his arms. Azazel lifted Simon off the ground so his feet were dangling in the air, and threw him. Or tried to. His hands slipped off Simon. Simon dropped to the ground in a crouch as Azazel shot backward and seemed to hit an invisible barrier. There was a sound like stone shattering. Azazel slid to his knees, then painfully rose to his feet. He looked up with a roar, teeth flashing, and stalked toward Simon, who, realizing belatedly what was going on, reached up with a shaking hand and pushed his hair back from his forehead. Azazel stopped in his tracks. His hands, the nails tipped with the same sharp iron as his teeth, curled in toward his sides.
Wanderer, he breathed. Is it you?
Simon stayed frozen. Magnus was still chanting softly in the background, but everyone else was silent. Simon was afraid to look around, to catch the eye of any of his friends. Clary and Jace, he thought, had already seen the work of the mark, its blazing fire. No one else had. No wonder they were wordless.
No, Azazel said, his fiery eyes narrowing. No, you are too young, and the world is too old. But who would dare place heaven's mark on a vampire, and why?
Simon lowered his hand. Touch me again and find out, he said. Azazel gave a rumbling sound, half laughter, half disgust.
I think not, he said. If you have been dabbling in bending the will of heaven, even my freedom is not worth gambling for by allying my fate with yours.
He glanced around the room.
You are all madmen. Good luck, human children. You will need it.
And he vanished in a burst of flame, leaving searing black smoke and the stink of sulfur behind. Hold still, Jace said, taking the Herondale dagger in his hand and using the tip of it to slice Clary's shirt open from the collar to the hem. He took the two halves of it and pushed them gingerly off her shoulders, leaving her sitting on the edge of the sink in just her jeans and a camisole. Most of the ichor and venom had gotten on her jeans and coat, but the fragile silk shirt was trashed. Jace dropped it into the sink, where it sizzled in the water, and applied his steely to her shoulder, tracing the outlines of the healing rune lightly. She closed her eyes, feeling the burn of the rune and then a rush as the relief from pain spread up her arms and down her back. It was like Novocaine, but without making her numb. "Better?" Jace asked. She opened her eyes. "Much." It wasn't perfect. The Aratzi didn't have much effect on burns caused by demon venom, but those tended to heal quickly on Shadowhunter's skin. As it was, they stung only a little, and Clary, still feeling the high of the battle, barely noticed it. "Your turn?" He grinned and offered her the Steely. They were in the back of the antique store. Sebastian had gone to lock up and dim the lights up front, lest they attract mundane attention. He was excited about celebrating, and when he had left them, had been debating whether to go back to the apartment and change, or straight to the nightclub in the Malastrana. If there was a part of Clary that felt the wrongness of it, the idea of celebrating anything, it was lost in the humming of her blood. Amazing that it had taken fighting alongside Sebastian, of all people, to flip the switch inside her that seemed to turn her Shadowhunter instincts on. She wanted to leap tall buildings in a single bound, do 100 flips, learn to scissor her blades the way Jace did. Instead, she took the Steely from him and said, "Take your shirt off, then." He pulled it over his head, and she tried to look unaffected. He had a long cut along his side, angry, purple-red along the edges, and the burns of demon blood across his collarbone and right shoulder. Still, he was the most beautiful person she had ever known. Pale gold skin, broad shoulders, narrow waist and hips, that thin line of golden hair that ran from his navel to the waistband of his jeans. She pulled her eyes away from him and set the Steely to his shoulder, industriously carving into his skin what had to be the millionth healing rune he'd ever gotten. "Good?" she asked when she was finished. "Mm-hmm." He leaned in, and she could smell the scent of him, blood and charcoal, sweat, and the cheap soap they found by the sink. "I like that," he said. "Didn't you? Fighting together like that?" It was intense. He was standing between her legs already. He moved closer, fingers looping into the waistband of her jeans. Her hands fluttered to his shoulders, and she saw the gleam of the gold leaf ring on her finger. It sobered her slightly. "Don't get distracted. Don't get lost in this. This isn't Jace. Isn't Jace. Isn't Jace." His lips brushed hers. "I thought it was incredible. You were incredible." "Jace," she whispered. And then there was a banging on the door. Jace let go of her in surprise, and she slid backward, knocking into the faucet, which immediately turned on, spraying them both with water. She yelped with surprise, and Jace burst out laughing, turning to throw the door open as Clary twisted around to turn the faucet off. It was Sebastian, of course. He looked remarkably clean, considering what they'd been through. He'd discarded his stained leather jacket in favor of an antique military coat, which, thrown over his t-shirt, lent him a look of thrift store chic. He was carrying something in his hands, something black and shiny. He raised his eyebrows. "Is there a reason you just threw my sister into the sink?" "I was sweeping her off her feet," said Jace, bending down to grab his shirt. He yanked it back on. Like Sebastian's, his outerwear had sustained most of the damage, though there was a rip down the side of the shirt where a demon's claw had slashed through. "I brought you something to wear," said Sebastian, handing the shiny black thing to Clary, who had wriggled out of the sink and was now standing, dripping soapy water onto the tile floor. "It's vintage. It looks about your size." Startled, Clary handed Jace back his Steely and took the proffered garment. It was a dress, a slip, really, jet black, with elaborately beaded straps and a lace hem. The straps were adjustable, and the fabric was stretchy enough that she suspected Sebastian was right. It probably would fit her. Part of her didn't like the idea of wearing something Sebastian had picked, but she couldn't exactly go out to a club in an unraveling camisole and a pair of soaking wet jeans. "Thanks," she said finally. "All right, both of you get out of here while I change." They left, closing the door behind them. She could hear them, raised boys' voices. And though she couldn't hear the words, she could tell they were joking with each other, comfortably, familiarly. It was so strange, she thought, as she shucked off her jeans and cami and slipped the dress over her head. Jace, who hardly ever opened up to anyone, was laughing and joking around with Sebastian. She turned to look at herself in the mirror. The black washed the color out of her skin, made her eyes look big and dark and her hair redder, her arms and legs long and thin and pale. Her eyes were smudged with dark shadow. The boots she had been wearing under her jeans added a certain toughness to the outfit. She wasn't sure if she looked pretty exactly, but she sure looked like she was someone who shouldn't be messed with. She wondered if Isabel would approve. She unlocked the bathroom door and stepped out. She was in the dim back of the store, where all the junk that wasn't housed up front had been tossed carelessly. A velvet curtain separated it from the rest of the establishment. Jace and Sebastian were on the other side of the curtain, talking, though she still couldn't make out the words. She pulled the curtain aside and stepped out. The lights were on, though the metal awning had been lowered over the glass front of the store, rendering the inside invisible to a passerby. Sebastian was going through the stuff on the shelves, his long, careful hands taking down object after object, subjecting them to a cursory inspection, and placing them back on the shelf. Jace was the first one to see Cleary. She saw his eyes spark, and remembered the first time he had seen her dressed up, wearing Isabel's clothes, on her way to Magnus's party. As they had then, his eyes traveled slowly from the boots, up her legs, hips, waist, chest, and came to rest on her face. He smiled lazily. "I could point out that's not a dress, that's underwear," he said, "but I doubt it would be in my best interest." "Need I remind you," said Sebastian, "that that is my sister. Most brothers would be delighted to see such a clean-cut gentleman as myself squiring their sisters about town," said Jace, grabbing an army jacket off one of the racks and sliding his arms into it. "Squiring?" Clary echoed. "Next you'll be telling me you're a rogue and a rake." "And then it's pistols at dawn," said Sebastian, striding toward the velvet curtain. "I'll be right back. I've got to wash the blood out of my hair." "Fussy, fussy," Jace called after him with a grin, then reached for Clary and pulled her against him. His voice dropped to a low whisper. "Remember when we went to Magnus's party? You came out to the lobby with Isabel, and Simon almost had an apoplectic fit? Funny, I was thinking about the same thing." She tipped her head back to look up at him. "I don't remember you saying anything at the time about the way I looked." His fingers slid under the straps of her slip dress, the tips brushing her skin. "I didn't think you liked me much, and I didn't think a detailed description of all the things I wanted to do to you, delivered in front of an audience, would have been the thing to change your mind." "You didn't think I liked you?" Her voice rose incredulously. "Jace, when has a girl ever not liked you?" He shrugged. "Doubtless the lunatic asylums of the world are filled with unfortunate women who have failed to see my charms." A question hovered on the tip of her tongue, one she had always wanted to ask him, but never had. After all, what did it really matter what he'd done before he met her? As if he could read the expression on her face, his golden eyes softened slightly. "I never cared what girls thought about me," he said. "Not before you." "Before you." Clary's voice shook a little. "Jace, I wondered..." "Your verbal foreplay is boring and annoying," said Sebastian, reappearing around the velvet curtain, his silver hair damp and tousled.
Ready to go?
Clary stepped free of Jace, blushing. Jace looked unruffled.
We're the ones who've been waiting for you.
Looks like you found a way to pass the agonizing time. Now come on, let's go.
I'm telling you, you're going to love this place.
I'm never getting my security deposit back, said Magnus glumly. He sat on top of the table, among the pizza boxes and coffee mugs, watching as the rest of Team Good did their best to clean up the destruction left by Azazel's appearance. The smoking holes pocked into the walls, the sulfurous black goo dripping from the ceiling pipes, the ash and the other grainy black substances ground into the floor. Chairman Meow was stretched across the warlock's lap, purring. Magnus was off cleaning duty because he'd allowed his apartment to be half-destroyed. Simon was off cleaning duty because after the pentagram incident, no one seemed to know quite what to make of him. He tried to talk to Isabel, but she'd only shaken her mop at him in a threatening manner.
"I have an idea," Simon said. He was sitting next to Magnus, his elbows on his knees.
"But you're not going to like it."
"I have a feeling you're right, Sherwin."
"Simon. My name is Simon."
"Whatever." Magnus waved a slender hand. "What's your idea?"
"I've got the mark of Cain," said Simon. "That means nothing can kill me, right?"
"You can kill yourself," Magnus said, somewhat unhelpfully.
"As far as I know, inanimate objects can accidentally kill you. So if you were planning on teaching yourself the limbada on a greased platform over a pit full of knives, I wouldn't."
"There goes my Saturday."
"But nothing else can kill you," Magnus said. His eyes had drifted away from Simon, and he was watching Alec, who appeared to be battling a Swiffer.
"Why?"
"What happened in the pentagram with Azazel made me think," said Simon. "You said summoning angels is more dangerous than summoning demons, because they might smite down the person who summoned them, or scorch them with heavenly fire."
"But if I did it..."
His voice trailed off.
"Well, I'd be safe, wouldn't I?"
That snapped Magnus's attention back.
"You summon an angel?"
"You could show me how," said Simon. "I know I'm not a warlock, but Valentine did it. If he did it, shouldn't I be able to? I mean, there are humans who can do magic."
"I couldn't promise you'd live," Magnus said, but there was a spark of interest in his voice that belied the warning.
"The mark is heaven's protection, but does it protect you against heaven itself?"
"I don't know the answer."
"I didn't think you did, but you agree that out of all of us, I probably have the best chance, right?" Magnus looked over at Maya, who was splashing dirty water at Jordan and laughing as he twisted away, yelping. She pushed her curling hair back, leaving a dark streak of dirt across her forehead. She looked young.
"Yes," Magnus said reluctantly.
"Probably you do."
"Who is your father?" asked Simon.
Magnus's eyes went back to Alec. They were gold-green, as unreadable as the eyes of the cat he held on his lap.
"Not my favorite topic, Smedley."
"Simon," said Simon, "if I'm going to die for you all, the least you could do is remember my name."
"You're not dying for me," said Magnus. "If it weren't for Alec, I'd be..."
"You'd be where?"
"I had a dream," Magnus said, his eyes distant. "I saw a city all of blood, with towers made of bone, and blood ran in the streets like water. Maybe you can save Jace, Daylighter, but you can't save the world. The darkness is coming, a land of darkness, as darkness itself, and of the shadow of death, without any order, and where the light is as darkness. If it weren't for Alec, I'd be gone from here."
"Where would you go?"
"Hide. Wait for it to blow over. I'm not a hero." Magnus picked up Chairman Meow and dumped him onto the floor.
"You love Alec enough to stick around,"
said Simon. That's kind of heroic. You loved Clary enough to wreck your whole life for her, said Magnus, with a bitterness that was not characteristic of him. See where that got you? He raised his voice. All right, everybody, get over here. Sheldon's had an idea. Who's Sheldon? Said Isabel. The streets of Prague were cold and dark, and though Clary kept her ichor-burned coat wrapped around her shoulders, she found the icy air cutting into the buzzing hum in her veins, muting the leftover high from the battle. She bought a cup of hot wine to keep the buzz going, wrapping her hands around it for warmth, as she, Jace, and Sebastian lost themselves in a twisting labyrinth of ever narrower, ever darker ancient streets. There were no street signs or names, and no other pedestrians. The only constant was the moon moving through thick clouds overhead. At last, a shallow flight of stone steps took them down into a tiny square, one side of which was lit by a flashing neon sign that said, Kosti Luster. Below the sign was an open door, a blank spot in the wall that looked like a missing tooth. What does that mean? Kosti Luster? Clary asked. It means the Bone Chandelier. It's the name of the nightclub, said Sebastian, sauntering forward. His pale hair reflected the changing neon colors of the sign. Hot red, cold blue, metallic gold. You coming? A wall of sound and light hit Clary the moment she entered the club. It was a big, tightly packed space that looked like it had once been the interior of a church. She could see stained glass windows high up in the walls. Darting colored spotlights picked out the blissed-out faces of dancers in the churning crowd, lighting them up one at a time, hot pink, neon green, burning violet. There was a DJ booth along one wall, and trance music blasted from the speakers. The music pounded up through her feet, into her blood, vibrating her bones. The room was hot with the press of bodies and the smell of sweat and smoke and beer. She was about to turn and ask Jace if he wanted to dance when she felt a hand on her back. It was Sebastian. She tensed but didn't pull away. Come on, he said into her ear. We're not staying up here with the hoi polloi. His hand was like iron pressing against her spine. She let him propel her forward through the dancers. The crowd seemed to part to let them through, people looking up to glance at Sebastian, then dropping their gazes, backing away. The heat increased, and Clary was almost gasping by the time they reached the far side of the room. There was an archway there that she hadn't noticed before. A set of worn stone steps led downward, curving away into darkness. She glanced up as Sebastian took his hand away from her back. Light blazed around them. Jace had taken out his witchlight runestone. He grinned at her, his face all angles and shadows in the harsh, focused light. Easy as the descent, he said. Clary shivered. She knew the whole phrase. Easy as the descent into hell. Come on, Sebastian jerked his head. And then he was moving downward, graceful and sure-footed, not worried about slipping on the age-smooth stones. Clary followed a little more slowly. The air grew cooler as they went down, and the sound of the pounding music faded. She could hear their breathing and see their shadows thrown distorted and spindly against the walls. She heard the new music before they reached the bottom of the stairs. It had an even more insistent beat than the music in the club upstairs. It shot through her ears and into her veins and spun her around. She was almost dizzy by the time they reached the last of the stairs and stepped out into a massive room that stole her breath. Everything was stone, the walls bumpy and uneven, the floor smooth beneath her feet. A massive statue of a black-winged angel rose along the far wall, its head lost in shadows far above, its wings dripping strings of garnets that looked like drops of blood. Explosions of color and light burst like cherry bombs throughout the room. Nothing like the artificial light upstairs.
These were beautiful, sparkling like fireworks, and every time one burst, it rained down a glittering shimmer onto the dancing crowd below. Huge marble fountains sprayed sparkling water. Black rose petals drifted onto the surface. And far above everything, dangling down above the packed floor of dancers on a long golden cord, was a massive chandelier made of bones. It was as intricate as it was gruesome. The main body of the chandelier was formed by spinal columns fused together. Femurs and tibias dripped like decoration from the arms of the fixture, which swooped up to cradle human skulls, each holding a massive taper. Black wax dripped like demon blood to spatter on the dancers below, none of whom seemed to notice. And the dancers themselves, whirling and spinning and clapping, none of them were human. "Werewolves and vampires," said Sebastian, answering Clary's unasked question. "In Prague, they're allies. This is where they relax." A hot breeze was blowing through the room, like desert wind. It lifted his silvery hair and blew it across his eyes, hiding their expression. Clary wriggled out of her coat and held it pressed against her chest, almost like a shield. She looked around with wide eyes. She could sense the non-humanness of the others in the room. The vampires with their pallor and their swift and languid grace, the werewolves fierce and fast. Most were young, dancing close, writhing up and down each other's bodies.
"But won't they mind us being here, Nephilim?"
"They know me," said Sebastian, "and they'll know you're with me." He reached out and tugged the coat out of her grip.
"I'll go get that hung up for you."
"Sebastian!" But he was gone, into the crowd. She looked at Jace beside her. He had his thumbs hooked into his belt and was looking around with casual interest.
"Vampire coat check?" she said.
"Why not?" Jace smiled. "You'll notice he didn't offer to take my coat. Chivalry is dead, I tell you." He tipped his head to the side at her quizzical expression.
"Whatever. There's probably someone he has to talk to here."
"So this isn't just for fun?"
"Sebastian never does anything just for fun."
Jace took her hands and pulled her toward him.
"But I do."
To Simon's complete lack of surprise, no one was enthusiastic about his plan. There was a loud chorus of disapproval, followed by a clamor of voices trying to talk him out of it, and questions, mostly directed at Magnus, about the safety of the whole enterprise. Simon rested his elbows on his knees and waited it out. Eventually he felt a soft touch on his arm. He turned, and to his surprise it was Isabel. She gestured at him to follow her. They wound up in the shadows near one of the pillars as the argument raged behind them. Since Isabel had initially been one of the loudest dissenters, he braced himself for her to yell at him. However, she only looked at him with her mouth tight.
"Okay," he said finally, hating the silence. "I guess you're not pleased with me right now."
"You guess?" "I'd kick your butt, vampire! But I don't want to ruin my expensive new boots."
"Isabel, I'm not your girlfriend."
"Right," Simon said, though he couldn't help a twinge of disappointment.
"I know that.
And I've never begrudged you the time you've spent with Clary. I've even encouraged it. I know how much you care about her, and how much she cares about you. But this is an insane risk you're talking about taking."
"Are you sure?"
Simon looked around, at Magnus's messy apartment, the small group in the corner arguing about his fate.
"This isn't just about Clary."
"Well, it isn't about your mother, is it?" Isabel said. "That she called you a monster?" "You don't have anything to prove, Simon. That's her problem, not yours."
"It's not like that.
Jace saved my life. I owe him." Isabel looked surprised.
You're not doing this just to pay Jace back, are you? Because I think by now everyone's pretty even.
No, not completely, he said. Look, we all know the situation. Sebastian can't be running around loose. It isn't safe. The Clave is right about that much. But if he dies, Jace dies. And if Jace dies, Clary... She'll survive, Isabel said, her voice quick and hard. She's tough and strong. She'll hurt. Maybe forever. I don't want her to hurt like that. I don't want you to hurt like that. Isabel crossed her arms. Of course not. But do you think she won't be hurt, Simon, if something happens to you? Simon bit his lip. He actually hadn't thought about it. Not like that. What about you? What about me? Will you be hurt if something happens to me? She kept looking at him, her back straight, her chin steady, but her eyes were shining. Yes. But you want me to help Jace? Yes, I want that too. You have to let me do this, he said. It's not just for Jace, or for you and Clary, though you're all a big part of it. It's because I believe darkness is coming. I believe Magnus when he says it. I believe Raphael is truly afraid of a war. I believe we're seeing a small piece of Sebastian's plan. But I don't think it's any coincidence he took Jace with him when he went, or that he and Jace are linked. He knows we need Jace to win a war. He knows what Jace is. Isabel didn't deny it. You're just as brave as Jace. Maybe, said Simon. But I'm not Nephilim. I can't do what he can do. And I don't mean as much to as many people. Special destinies and special torments, Isabel whispered. Simon, you mean a lot to me. He reached out and lightly cupped her cheek. You're a warrior, Iz. It's what you do. It's what you are. But if you can't fight Sebastian because hurting him would hurt Jace, you can't fight the war. And if you have to kill Jace to win the war, I think it'll kill part of your soul. And I don't want to see that. Not if I could do something to change it. She swallowed. It's not fair, she said. That it has to be you. This is my choice to do this. Jace doesn't have a choice. If he dies, it's for something he didn't have anything to do with. Not really. Isabel expelled a breath. She uncrossed her arms and took him by the elbow. All right, she said. Let's go. She steered him back toward the group, who broke off their argument and stared when she cleared her throat, as if they hadn't quite realized the two of them had been missing until this moment. That's enough, she said. Simon has made his decision, and it's his decision to make. He's going to summon Raziel, and we're going to help him in any way we can. They danced. Clary tried to lose herself in the pounding beat of the music, the rush of blood in her veins, the way she had once been able to do at Pandemonium with Simon. Of course, Simon had been a fairly terrible dancer, and Jace was an excellent dancer. She supposed it made sense. With all that trained fighting control and careful grace, there wasn't much she couldn't make his body do. When he flung his head back, his hair was dark with sweat, pasted to his temples, and the curve of his throat gleamed in the light of the bone chandelier. She saw the way the other dancers looked at him, appreciation, speculation, predatory hunger. A possessiveness she couldn't name or control rose up inside her. She moved closer, sliding up his body the way she'd seen girls do on the dance floor before, but had never had the nerve to try herself. She'd always been convinced she'd get her hair caught on someone's belt buckle, but things were different now. Her months of training didn't just pay off in a fight, but any time she had to use her body. She felt fluid, in control, in a way she never had before. She pressed her body against Jace's. His eyes had been closed. He opened them just as an explosion of colored light lit up the darkness above them. Metallic drops rained down on them. Droplets were caught in Jace's hair and shimmering on his skin like mercury. He touched his fingers to a drop of silver liquid on his collarbone and showed it to her, his lips curving. "Do you remember what I told you that first time at Tacky's? About fairy food? I remember you said you ran down Madison Avenue naked with antlers on your head," said Clary, blinking silver drops off her lashes. "I don't think that was ever proved to have actually been me." Only Jace could talk while he danced and not make it look awkward. "Well, this stuff," and he flicked at the silvery liquid that mixed with his hair and skin, painting him in metal, "is like that. It'll get you..." "Hi?" He watched her with darkened eyes. "It can be fun." Another of the drifting flower things burst above their heads. This spatter was silver blue, like water. Jace licked a drop off the side of his hand, studying her. "Hi." Clary had never done drugs, didn't even drink. Maybe if you counted the bottle of Kahlua she and Simon had smuggled out of his mom's liquor cabinet and drunk when they'd been 13. They'd been heartily sick afterward. Simon had, in fact, thrown up in a hedge. It hadn't been worth it. But she did remember the sensation of being dizzy and giggly and happy for no reason. When Jace lowered his hand, his mouth was stained with silver. He was still watching her. Gold eyes dark under his long lashes. Happy for no reason. She thought of the way they had been together in the time after the mortal war before Lilith had begun to possess him. He had been the Jace in the photograph on his wall then. So happy. They both had been happy. There had been no nagging doubt when she looked at him. None of this feeling of tiny knives under her skin, eroding the closeness between them. She leaned up then and kissed him, slowly and definitively, on the lips. Her mouth exploded with a sweet, sour taste, a mixture of wine and candy. More of the silvery liquid rained down on them as she pulled away from him, licking her mouth deliberately. Jace was breathing hard. He reached for her, but she spun away, laughing. She felt wild and free suddenly, and incredibly light. She knew there was something terribly important she was supposed to be doing, but she couldn't remember what it was or why she had cared. The faces of the dancers around her no longer looked vulpine and faintly frightening, but darkly beautiful. She was in a great echoing cavern, and the shadows around her were painted with colors lovelier and brighter than any sunset. The angel statue that loomed above her seemed benevolent, 1,000 times more so than Raziel in his cold white light, and a high singing note sounded from it, pure and clear and perfect. She spun, faster and faster, leaving behind grief, memories, loss, until she spun into a pair of arms that snaked around her from behind and held her tight. She looked down and saw scarred hands locked around her waist. Slim, beautiful fingers. The Voyance Rune. Jace. She melted back against him, closing her eyes, letting her head fall into the curve of his shoulder. She could feel his heart beating against her spine. No one else's heart beat like Jace's did, or ever could. Her eyes flew open, and she spun around, her hands out to push him away. "Sebastian," she whispered. Her brother grinned down at her, silver and black like the Morgenstern ring. "Clarissa," he said, "I want to show you something." "No." The word came and went, dissolving like sugar into liquid. She couldn't remember why she was supposed to say no to him. He was her brother. She should love him. He had brought her to this beautiful place. Perhaps he had done bad things. But that was a long time ago, and she could no longer remember what they were. "I can hear angels singing," she said to him. He chuckled. "I see you found out that silvery stuff isn't just glitter." He reached forward and stroked his forefinger across her cheekbone. It was silver when it came away, as if he had caught a painted tear. "Come along, angel girl," he held out his hand.
"But Jace," she said, "I lost him in the crowd.
He'll find us." Sebastian's hand clamped around hers, surprisingly warm and comforting. She let him draw her toward one of the fountains in the middle of the room and set her down on the wide marble edge. He sat down beside her, her hand still in his.
"Look in the water," he said. "Tell me what you see."
She leaned over and looked into the smooth, dark surface of the pool. She could see her own face reflected back at her, her eyes wide and wild, her eye makeup smudged like bruises, her hair tangled. And then Sebastian leaned over too, and she saw his face beside her. The silver of his hair reflected in the water made her think of the moon on the river. She reached to touch its brilliance, and the water shivered apart, the reflections distorting, unrecognizable.
"What is it?" Sebastian said, and there was a low urgency in his voice.
Clary shook her head.
"He was being very silly."
"I saw you and me," she said in a chiding tone. "What else?" He put his hand under her chin and turned her face toward him. His eyes were black, night black, with only a ring of silver separating the pupil from the iris.
"Don't you see it? We're the same, you and me."
"The same?" She blinked at him. There was something very wrong with what he was saying, though she couldn't say quite what.
"No."
"You're my sister," he said. "We have the same blood." "You have demon blood," she said. "Lilith's blood." For some reason, this struck her as funny, and she giggled.
"You're all dark, 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 and Jace and I are light."
"You have a dark heart in you, Valentine's daughter," he said. "You just won't admit it. And if you want Jace, you'd better accept it, because he belongs to me now."
"Then who do you belong to?"
Sebastian's lips parted. He said nothing. For the first time, Clary thought, he looked as if he had nothing to say. She was surprised. His words hadn't meant much to her, and she'd merely been idly curious. Before she could say anything else, a voice above them said, "What's going on?" It was Jace. He looked from one of them to the other, his face unreadable. More of the shimmering stuff had gotten on him, silver drops clinging to the gold of his hair.
"Clary?" He sounded annoyed.
She pulled away from Sebastian and hopped to her feet.
"Sorry," she said breathlessly. "I got lost in the crowd."
"I noticed," he said. "One second I was dancing with you, and the next you were gone, and a very persistent werewolf was trying to get the buttons on my jeans undone."
Sebastian chuckled. "Girl or boy, werewolf?"
"Not sure. Either way, they could have used a shave." He took Clary's hand, lightly wringing her wrist with his fingers.
"Do you want to go home, or dance some more?"
"Dance some more. Is that all right?"
"Go ahead."
Sebastian leaned back, his hands braced behind him on the fountain's edge, his smile like the edge of a straight razor.
"I don't mind watching."
Something flashed across Clary's vision, the memory of a bloody handprint. It was gone as soon as it had come, and she frowned. The night was too beautiful to think of ugly things. She looked back at her brother only for a moment before she let Jace lead her back through the crowd to its edge, near the shadows, where the press of bodies was lighter. Another ball of colored light burst above their heads as they went, scattering silver, and she tipped her head up, catching the salt-sweet drops on her tongue. In the center of the room, beneath the bone chandelier, Jace stopped, and she swung toward him. Her arms were around him, and she felt the silver liquid trickling down her face like tears. The fabric of his t-shirt was thin, and she could feel the burn of his skin underneath. Her hands slid up under the hem, her nails scratching lightly over his ribs. Silver drops of liquid spangled his eyelashes as he lowered his glance to hers, leaned to whisper in her ear. His hands moved over her shoulders, down her arms. Neither of them were really dancing anymore. The hypnotic music went on around them, in the whirl of other dancers, but Clary barely noticed. A couple moving past laughed and made a derisive comment in Czech. Clary couldn't understand it, but suspected the gist was, get a room. Jace made an impatient noise, and then he was moving through the crowd again, drawing her after him and into one of the shadowy alcoves that lined the walls. There were dozens of these circular alcoves, each lined with a stone bench and provided with a velvet curtain that could be pulled closed to provide a modicum of privacy. Jace yanked the curtain shut, and they crashed against each other like the sea against the shore. Their mouths collided and slid together. Jace lifted her up so she was pressed against him, his fingers twisting in the slippery material of her dress. Clary was conscious of heat and softness, hands seeking and finding, yielding in pressure, her hands under Jace's t-shirt, her fingernails clawing at his back, savagely pleased when he gasped. He bit down on her bottom lip and she tasted blood in her mouth, salt and hot. It was as if they wanted to cut each other apart, she thought, to climb inside each other's bodies and share their heartbeats, even if it killed them both. It was dark in the alcove, so dark that Jace was only an outline of shadows and gold. His body pinned Clary's to the wall, his hand slid down along her body and reached the end of her dress, drawing it up along her legs. "What are you doing?" she whispered. "Jace." He looked at her. The peculiar light in the club turned his eyes an array of fractured colors. His smile was wicked. "You can tell me to stop whenever you want," he said. "But you won't."